Blog Talk Radio.
You may have been the first one to gone to college, gotten the graduate degree, graduated from law school or medical school, and you've got all that debt, plus you're the first person in your family to have gone to college, so now everyone is looking toward you to help. So I like to say in some of the seminars that I teach, when I teach to African American crowd, you know, we in our families, we've got everything from PhDs to oh pookie please.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Midday Money Show, your weekly shot of uncommon financial good sense. I'm Tony Husbands, a financial coach with the Debt Free Divas, and I love talking about all things as they relate to your money. So last week, if you didn't catch it, you really want to go back and check out the panel that I had with four fabulous women on the state of financial affairs in the African American community. We were at FinCon, which is a financial conference for, we'll just say, money nerds in San Diego earlier this year. And so I had a chance to assemble that wonderful group of personal finance experts to discuss and think about some of the things that we're doing right in the Black community, some of the things that we're doing wrong as it relates to personal finances, wealth building, debt, all of that. Well, since I was there with all those great people, I thought, why not take a second stab at this and see what our male counterparts think on the topic. So what did I do? I grabbed, thankfully, a super nice assortment of personal finance professionals who just happened to be male, but who offered their insights on the very same questions. And I'll say that this was a super interesting follow-up to my first panel discussions. And I may have stumbled onto something here. I think I'm loving panel discussions. The synergy of ideas, the sharing of insight is just, it's really sitting well with me. I might have to delve into this a little deeper in the future. Anyway, we talked about the same topics, but it's really interesting to get their perspective on it, their perspective on things that we are doing, what we can be doing better. We had a lot of financial planners, which is good. So it's, again, a different perspective on the same topic, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy this. So before we get started, though, I just want to let you know that all links to all resources mentioned in today's episode will, of course, be available on my website. This is the Financial State of Affairs in the African American Community, Part 2. Just head over to debtfreedivas.org. So before we dive into the conversation, I just want to let the gentlemen introduce themselves and let you know a little bit about what they're doing.
Hey, I'm Jason Butler, owner of thebutlerjournal.com. I discuss travel, side hustles, chronicle my debt journey. I'm currently in the process of paying off $72,000, and I want to show other people that they can do that as well.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jude Wilson. I am the owner of Wilson Group Financial. We help people plan wise and retire free. We're helping people make sure that they get to retirement and can continue their retirement without any stress. I've had my firm for 7 years, but I've been in the financial services industry for 18 years.
My name is Wilson Muskaden at the Money Speakeasy. Well, I'll tell you about the Money Speakeasy. It's a site for young professionals to learn about the basics of personal finance, budgeting, debt, debt management. What got me started was seeing that there was a need, seeing that I was getting a lot of questions about basic financial topics, particularly young professionals starting out. Where should I start to invest? How do I get out of debt? Those kinds of those basic questions. How can I maximize my employee benefits? Those kinds of questions, and they kept coming up. And I also know that we're not taught personal finance in school. So for a lot of these questions, that they didn't just have a general resource for questions, and the financial industry doesn't do a good job talking to people about the basics. They want to talk about start with talking about investing. So I wanted to get back to the fundamentals.
My name is Brian Thompson. I'm a registered investment advisor, so I own my own firm, Brian Thompson Financial LLC.
So like I shared on the first panel discussion, as an African-American community, we hold only 2% of the wealth in this country, and it really blew my mind to learn that if you have a net worth, so remember, folks, that's the value of your assets or things that you own minus your debts or your liabilities. So if you have a net worth of $350,000 or more, that puts you in the top 5% of Black families in this country. And if you think about it, that really could be all in your house. Crazy. So we're making income gains and educational gains and have this collective buying power of over $1 trillion in this country as African Americans, but we have more debt and we have less to show for it. So I put the same question to the panel. What are we doing wrong?
This is Brian, and I don't know that we're doing anything wrong. We've been held back for quite a while, so catching up is not going to be something that's going to be quick, and being able to grow wealth and pass it on is a long-term thing. So the generations that are coming on now are the first ones that are acquiring this wealth, and to be able to pass it on and pass it on to different generations is just going to take time for us to catch up. I mean, obviously, I think almost everybody can learn more about finances and learn more about how to manage wealth and how to keep it. But I really feel like the big problem is the institution, or us just being behind in the first place and then having to catch up given these circumstances and given what we're dealing with as far as institutional racism and the lack of education that we've had so far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is Jason, everybody. One thing that I think that lacks in our communities, especially our inner city schools, we're not taught finances at all. I learned about finances because I had a mother, a smart mom, and she actually taught me, my brother, and my sister, basically the basics of finances. But I have a lot of friends who went to college. They took out loans. They got broke, and now they're in a lot of debt. We didn't learn interest and stuff like that in the inner city schools. Like, I'm from Atlanta, a product of Atlanta public schools, and I can't tell you one class that taught us about money for real. So that, yep, at all. Yep, whole high school career, well, whole school career at all. I learned a little bit about it in college, but by then, you're 18, 19, and 20 in college. You definitely could have made some mistakes by then by getting those credit cards out early and just spending that money thinking that you'd be able to pay it off real fast. And in actuality, you don't consider the interest that those cards charge or the fact that you need to pay more than the minimum balance each month. So I think that we need to be educated early, like very early, like in elementary school when it comes to finances.
And so before we continue, I just want to let Jason delve into his story about debt and collecting it before he was really old enough to understand, which is really too typical.
Yeah, $72,000 was what I started out with my debt. The majority of it was student loans. And the reason why I got to 72 was because I was kind of arrogant. Everything else had went fine, perfect for me. I graduated from South Atlanta High School. If you're from Atlanta, you know that that's one of the bad schools in Atlanta public schools. I was able to go to college, and I graduated with no problem. So I figured, perfect, I'd be able to get a job with no problem. But nobody told me that in 2008 that the economy would crash like it did. So I graduated at a horrible time in history. It took me a year and a half to get my first full-time job. So I had to make a decision during that time, either pay my student loans and my credit card bills, or pay my rent and my cell phone bill. I think anybody in my situation would have paid their rent and cell phone. So I ignored the student loans for a couple of years because I didn't have the money to pay for it. I had to survive.
This episode is sponsored by Personal Capital, a free online tool that helps you keep track of your personal finances, folks. Track your spending, manage your investments, and keep up with everything through their secure mobile app. You can support the Midday Money Show and take advantage of this fabulous free tool by creating a free account with Personal Capital. Head over to debtfreedivas.org/personal and we'll show you the way. Not to be a negative Nelly and keep the focus on the negative, I also wanted to know what we're doing right. Jude waxes poetically about what our priorities should be, what they have been, and why that might be holding us back.
This is Jude, and first, I want to say that both Brian and Jason had excellent points, and I agree with them. What we're doing right as a community is everything that you mentioned before. We're getting more education. We are earning more money. But the things that we need to do to continue that maturation as far as increasing our net worth is, in my firm, we have a cross-section of clients. We have, of course, African-American clients and Caucasian clients. And you can really see the difference between first-generation wealth and second-generation wealth. And these are just generalities, but what I see is with my Caucasian clients, not only are they concerned about getting to retirement and building wealth, but they're also concerned about passing on wealth to their children. And that's not something typically as a society, in the black society, that we've really focused on.
Why is that?
I don't think that's been a priority. The priority has been, Yeah, can we get to retirement? And then plus we don't know the techniques and the strategies of passing on wealth. And in this industry, it's hard to find someone to really trust. What is it really a financial planner or is it a financial salesperson? And so for our community, we have a high level of distrust, and on top of it, we're not being educated. So those strategies are not being passed on to us that our counterparts do have.
I think when we compare things, this is Wilson, I think when we compare things, it's important to have historical context. So if we were talking about African Americans, we're talking about 1619 to 1863, 250 years of bondage. Then you're talking about 100 years of Jim Crow. And then you're talking about just the recent last 50 years of actually having full rights under the law. So we really only have one generation. Well, so when we're comparing to the white, or we're comparing to a Caucasian community, we're talking about one generation of wealth versus five, six generations of wealth. And so I think that context is important to have in terms of comparing where we are now in those numbers compared to other communities. I think the second thing is that the U.S. GDP. The gross domestic product, the U.S., is 70% based, is 70% consumer based. And so the way America runs is by building consumerism, and we're a consumerism culture. And so in terms of what's going right or what we need to do better is we have to overcome the consumerism culture where ads are forced on us. We want to spend, get your credit card and all that. And particularly Gen X was learned to spend to the hilt. And so we have to overcome some of those things in order to become an investment and an investing culture. And so that change is what we're going to need to do going forward.
Let me ask you, Wilson, do you feel like there are any changes in the trends in the way millennials approach finances than, say, Gen Xers or boomers did?
So I think one of the things that are most important to millennials is flexibility. Millennials, one of the most seminal events for millennials was 9/11 and the 2008 market crash. For those two reasons, I think there is sort of less trust of big financial institutions, but at the same time, wanting flexibility and independence. I don't want to be tied down to something. Well, I think particularly for African-American millennials, there is there's two sides of the coin. There is the consumer-based culture, but there's also I want to have maximum flexibility. I don't want to be tied down to this job forever or this house forever. I want to be able to make moves and this kind of thing. So we're caught in between these two worlds. And so I think there's we're looking for other ways to be able to accomplish our goals.
This might not be fair because I'll be honest, I wasn't doing this at this time, but I'm still going to ask. But do you feel like, you know, your cohort is thinking long term, given that we do have the recent experience with the 2008 crash and 9/11, and now we do have a generation of wealth to tangibly look back at? Do you feel like your generation has any kind of mindset that is, I guess, helping us think long term and thinking about our finances in terms of what I'm going to do, you know, 20, 30 years down the road, or are we still very immediate?
I agree 100% with Wilson. I really think it's a 50-50 split. I'm seeing with a lot of my friends, we're not the ones that want to work for the companies for 30, 40 years and then retire with a pension, because a lot of companies don't offer that anymore. A lot of us want to be able to travel. We want to have freedom. We want to be able to make money, but we don't want to do it the old-fashioned way. And then I also have friends that still get the jobs and just work forever. But I do think that, especially with like a lot of the things that's going on in the country, these days, that we are getting to a point, like I know for a fact, since I'm starting to get a little bit older, I'm starting to think about generational wealth, because my family, they really haven't had too much wealth passed down. My grandmother passed away about 3 years ago, and she had a little bit of money, but I look at it like, wow, she had this amount. What am I going to have, like, once I get to that age? Like, am I going to have anything? So, like, the last year and a half, I figured that, well, like, part of the reason I'm paying my debt is because I need to have it eliminated. But I want to start generating passive income so that I can eventually create generational wealth, because I don't want my family to struggle when I'm not here anymore.
There's a big part to what Jason just said about your grandmother passing away. If you look at all studies, a majority of African-American wealth is in their home, their real estate. So the crash of 2008 wiped out most of the equity. And most people know that when grandma passes away, they leave Big Mama's house, and Big Mama's house comes down to the next generation. Well, now Big Mama's house probably was taken by the bank, and that hurts even more. So when you said what you did, it just made me remember that a lot of wealth isn't being passed down. One of the reasons is because that wealth, part of that that capital, was in real estate.
That brings up a point. Thank you, Jude, for mentioning that. And I want to ask Brian, what are some, talking about generational wealth, what are some of the barriers that exist right now? Because some of the barriers to long-term wealth building have been the lack of inheritance. You know, debt too, and I want to get to that. But since Jude brought that up, the lack of inheritance, what do you think are going to change some of the, I guess, the trends toward, some of the attitudes towards that trend in the Black community?
Well, I think it's sort of what we talked about at the beginning. It's education, and a lot of what's going on right now, especially in the financial advising industry, I'm assuming you've experienced this too, Jude, that it's, we're focusing on Generations X and Generation Y at this point, and those are going to be the people that are going to be the ones that are going to build the wealth, even if we can't inherit it. They're going to be the ones that are going to be able to build the wealth and keep the wealth and make sure that those lessons are passed on to the younger generations. So in my practice, I want to focus on Generation X, Generation Y people, so they know the right types of things to do, the right types of building blocks to have in order to make sure that they're building the foundation that may not come because of the recession or the lack of wealth that has disappeared due to the recession.
Let's talk about, I guess, attitudes. And I don't mean to, like, put you guys on the spot as the spokesperson for the male, you know, the Black male race or whatever. But I, you know, because I have, you know, this perspective here, I kind of want, and I know, obviously, too, you have an interest in or a background in finances. But I want to know, like, in terms of the people that you're working with or maybe the people that you're coming in contact with on a regular basis, what are some of the kind of general attitudes towards debt that you have experienced among African-American men in the community?
This is Brian again. And the experience of debt has been, it's been something to be afraid of and worried about, and no matter what type of debt it was. I came out of law school with $166,000 in student loans. Thinking that this is good debt, this is the type of debt that I can pay off, but not really understanding that I could have gone to a cheaper law school for free and not have had the opportunity cost of losing $166,000. So we're all dealing with, especially our generation, we're just dealing with a lot of debt, whether it's student loan debt, whether it's credit card debt or mortgages, whatever. And it's an attitude of fear and it's an attitude of misunderstanding. We don't understand how debt works, the problems of having a lot of debt, and what that does for your career, what it does for your ability to gain wealth through a regular basis. So we have to understand that and make sure that we're being educated on those types of things.
Well, my daytime job is I'm a financial aid counselor at one of the local universities in Atlanta. I talk to the younger Black male students all the time, and they don't care. They just worried about getting in school in the moment, and they figured that they'll be able to pay it off as soon as they graduate. I try to give them tips such as staying at home for a couple years, possibly going to a community college and then coming back to Georgia State a year or two later once you get some scholarship money, because there are a lot of scholarships out there. The thing is, I've realized that some of us are kind of lazy and we don't want to find that free money, but it's out there for the taking. And instead of trying to get the free money, we'll accept all our federal loans. If that's not enough, we'll go to Wells Fargo, Bank of America, or Sallie Mae or Navient and take out loans which we really don't need. And they just, like, I try to tell the students all the time, don't be in the same situation that I was in. Like, I made some mistakes about 10 years ago when I was in college. Y'all don't have to be in the same situation that I am.
This is Jude again. It's interesting when I look at my clients, particularly when I look at the differences among the races. And for my African-American clients, a lot of them are first-generation wealthy. And let me backtrack. I should say first-generation affluent. There's a difference between wealth and affluence. Okay, so wealth means you have equity, you have capital. Affluence means you have cash flow. You're making, you know, a good salary, and you can spend that salary. But one of the things that I think hampers us, particularly that first generation affluent, is that we've got a lot of responsibilities in addition to the student loans. So you may have been the first one to gone to college, gotten the graduate degree, graduated from law school or medical school, and you've got all that debt, plus you're the first person in your family to have gone to college, so now everyone is looking toward you to help. So I like to say in some of the seminars that I teach, when I teach to African-American crowd, you know, we in our families, we've got everything from PhDs to oh Pookie please. and so Pookie may need some help, and they're looking at you because you, quote-unquote, have made it. And so they don't understand that just because I make a good six-figure income doesn't mean that I've built up equity and capital, and then we turn to debt to help out. And so that puts us on this cycle that's hard to get out of. And so some of our counterparts may have the same situation, but they may not have that situation to have to deal with. So they start at the finishing line two steps ahead of us. So what I see as far as to answer your question directly, our attitude toward debt is that we have to understand the difference between cash flow and equity and capital, and not be seduced by, you know, the consumerism that Wilson talked about, and getting that debt to keep up with the Joneses and to keep that look of that higher end lifestyle that we're expected to have if we're the doctor, the lawyer, the engineer.
This is Wilson. I'll just add a little bit to that in the same frame, particularly talking about first-generation college students. I think there has been a story for first-generation college students that get into the best school that you can get into, regardless. And particularly if you're the first generation, you are the Michael Jordan of your family. You've got to make it, and you've got to make it for everybody else. And whether that means taking on debt, you've got to do whatever you've got to do in order to do that. So there has been the story, and going back to the consumerism point, college is an investment. And so it's not debt, it's an investment. But because of the 2008 crash, that kind of thing, people are starting to retake a look at that, because student loans are a story all the time now in student debt. So now we're seeing a generation of folks that are like, okay, maybe there's another way to do it, that I don't have to get straddled by these loans. So I would say for millennials in particular, there is an aversion to debt. They are starting to be aware of it, but you do have the same dynamic of, if you're the first in the family, like, you know, I've got to go to achieve the highest I can achieve regardless. So there is that dynamic that is tougher for folks on either side.
These gentlemen had such sweet and mellow spirits, but their wisdom spoke volumes. There was a lot of food for thought laid out in our brief conversation. So before we wrapped up, I asked each of them to leave us with their best money tip. Why not tap into that financial power that I have in front of us, right?
So basic money tip, I think, particularly for millennials, most of the information that you're going to get about finances is not going to be in school. So for my purposes, whether it was in K through 12, college, grad school, I have an MBA, we never talked about personal finances. And so most of the things that you're going to learn about personal finance are going to be outside of school. So my tip for millennials is continue to learn about money outside of school. Be interested and aware of financial topics, because regardless of whether you what I would say, here's my money tip. When you decided that you wanted to learn how to drive, you didn't say, well, I'm not a car person. Like, you determined that driving was important, and so you learn. So many people with money, they'd say, well, I'm not a math person, or I don't really do numbers. Like, it's not about being good at finance. It's not about how good you are with math. It is a necessity that you need to learn this information in order to do the things that you want to do.
This is Jude again, and I think what I really want to get across to people, our tagline at the company is Plan Wise, Retire Free. And specifically, the reason why we created that tagline is that we need to focus on strategies. You know, there are strategies for becoming successful. And if we just leave it up to, you know, I'm making six figures, I'm happy, or, you know, I'm not making six figures, I want to get there one day, you may not get to financial freedom. Financial freedom is a thought process, and it's a planning process, and it's strategies that go behind that. And so, you know, if I were to give one financial tip to everybody, I would say either through your own research, because there's a ton of information now on the internet, or through finding someone that's really credible, understand the difference between a financial salesperson and a financial planner. Find somebody credible that can really help you.
This is Jason again, everybody. My one big tip for people, save money. Like, you have to save some money. Something will happen. You may need new tires. Something in your house may break. Save. And honestly, you need to start off with at least $1,000. That may be small to some people, but you need to have something. It'll take the weight off your shoulders if you have that money when the emergency happens. I had a couple situations happen within the last couple years, and if I didn't have that extra $1,000 saved, I'd be struggling. So definitely make sure that you save. It's going to take some discipline, but you'll thank yourself down the line once you save at least $1,000.
This is Brian. I agree with everybody. I feel like all those are good tips. And just sort of piggyback off of what Jude was saying is we all need to start planning. You need to have a plan in mind. And to me, the initial part of the plan is knowing what your values are about money, because financial freedom means something different for everybody. So take some time. My financial tip would be to take some time, think about what your values are, what you want out of money, what you want money to do, and then think about your goals, and then figure out what those planning strategies are to get you to where you want to be.
I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. This was another insightful conversation on the financial state of affairs in the African American community. Again, links to all of the resources and sites mentioned by my guests will be available in the show notes for this episode on my website. Head over to debtfreedivas.org if you want to connect with any of these gentlemen in a closer way. I want to thank all the panelists from today and from even last week for just really helping us to kind of dive into some things, scratch the surface on a couple of topics, and hopefully pay closer attention to what we need to do in our own financial houses to get our lives in order, because that's what it's all about. If you haven't joined me already, please do so. You can get there on my website. Take the Hidden Money Challenge. Over 1,000 people have gone through that so far, and it's going great, and I want to have you in there. 6 days to do more with the money that you already have so that you can get about the business of dumping debt, and that's what we're all about here at the Debt Free Divas. So thanks for hanging out with me again this week. We'll be back with you with another topic next week. Until then, have a great money week.